Hey, babe.
What's up?
What's my favorite kind of party?
Definitely a tea party.
I do love tea parties, yes. But not the answer I was looking for.
Dance party?
I do love dance parties. Also no, though.
Fancy dinner parties.
Oh, my God. You know everything about me. No. It has to do with, like, today's episode.
I give up.
It's a Donner party. Get it? Because we're talking about Tahoe today.
Is this entire episode going to be a Donner party reference?
Yes.
Hi, we're Leah and Jeremy.
We're the accident-prone travelers behind Practical Wanderlust.
And we're here to dish out travel tips, travel tricks,
useful trivia, useless trivia,
mildly entertaining anecdotes,
and everything else you need to avoid making all of our terrible, 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 terrible mistakes.
And we make a lot of mistakes. Today we are talking about arguably my favorite place on earth, and that's Lake Tahoe.
I thought you were going to say home where you live with your wife, but wow. Okay. Tahoe's cool.
I stand by it. If someone were to make a California bucket list, I think that Tahoe should be on it twice.
Why twice?
Twice.
Why twice?
Once for winter and once for summer.
Oh, that makes sense. You know what I always say, though? The best time to visit Lake Tahoe is any time other than the winter of 1846.
We are not a minute in and you have already made a Donner Party joke.
Listen, if you think that this entire episode is not actually about my obsession with the Donner Party, you are completely wrong.
Okay, try to keep it to like a dull roar.
I will. I'm going to do my best. I promise. Less Donner Party jokes. So here's a question. Why is everybody so obsessed with Lake Tahoe? Like, I didn't grow up in California and it wasn't like I knew about it, but I think I always thought of it as like Lake Placid, like that one movie. You know what I mean?
Like there's just alligators waiting to eat you?
Yeah. Like I didn't know anything about it. So why is it such a thing here?
It's just like this glorious lake in the middle of the Sierra Nevadas. You like go over the ridge and it's just this huge blue water, towering pine trees, alpine meadows. It's gorgeous.
You didn't even mention the granite. You really take it for granted, don't you?
I called dibs on that joke before we started recording, and now I'm a little salty about it.
Well, should have made it. It is actually, it's a giant lake. I mean, it's the largest lake in the U.S. that isn't a Great Lake. And just for the like fact checkers out there, by volume, look it up. It's on Wikipedia.
We did some deep research.
We did very, very much research.
Yeah. And the great thing about Tahoe is that it's good for summer and winter. It's got these beautiful beaches and like crystal clear water.
The water is like ridiculously clear.
But it's also ridiculously cold. And then in the winter, it's like some of the best slopes in the country. People actually, like professionals actually go out there to experience it.
Ah, yes. Professional skiers.
Yes. You know, the people that have it really rough.
Yeah. You know what I always think of when we talk about professional skiers is like just 80s ski montages. Like,
there's like the ragtag group at the cabin who have to take on the local ski team. And it's always like,
this is my mountain. And then it's like, Percival. Percival's such an asshole. We grew up together and we went to boarding school together and he thinks it's his mountain, but it's my mountain. And it's just like a bunch of rich white guys.
Just because you go to public school, you think that you can take us.
All the babes on this mountain are already my babes, so you can just get out with your stupid snowboard.
And then they win and it's like, hot tub party at our place.
This is actually like every ski movie that exists. What's the one that I really like that I always go watch the YouTube video for?
Oh man, Ski School.
Ski School. Go watch the YouTube trailer for Ski School. It's hilarious. The other thing that I love about Lake Tahoe is it's very close to San Francisco. So like we can get there in 3.5 hours. You've actually done it. You've driven to Lake Tahoe in the morning, skied all day like a fucking 80s ski montage person, and then driven back that evening.
Yeah, I don't recommend it, but it's definitely possible. It's a super quick weekend trip.
Yeah, it's one of the best weekend trips from San Francisco, which we have a blog post about.
We do.
Historically, Lake Tahoe was also the center of the heart of the Washoe Indian Territory, but then a bunch of colonizers came through and just turned it into like tourism center, and it's kind of just been, you know, a tourism's hub ever since. Which there's also like a lot of like really interesting weird history that came from that period of kind of pioneer tourism, which we'll get into later.
Yeah, the mid-1800s in California is just crazy.
Some weird shit happened, which we will definitely talk about, and I'm very excited about it.
We can tell you're very excited about a certain party that happened.
It's the best party.
Did they have party hats?
They may have, but they probably ate them.
Okay, we'll get to that later. We have some Tahoe stories of our own. We visit every year multiple times.
We do, because, you know, summer, winter.
Right.
What's your favorite one of our, like, ridiculous Tahoe stories? Because I feel like we have a whole bunch.
Oh, man. There was our last trip before our honeymoon.
That's right.
When we stayed at DL Bliss.
We kind of went on like a goodbye tour of California. And we tried to hit all of our favorite California spots because we're just like big California douchebags and we really love it here. And so we got a campsite because we were leaving in July. So we got a campsite in DL Bliss, which is like our favorite place to camp in Lake Tahoe.
It's awesome.
And we strung up our hammocks because we hammock camp. I don't like sleeping in a tent. I don't like sleeping on the ground. I love being softly rocked to sleep like a baby.
And we will tell anyone who doesn't ask all about hammock camping.
We love hammock camping. So the other thing, though, is like Tahoe is bear country. I'm a little scared of bears. I'm also just a kind of nervous person in general, and I get cold at night. So I made Jeremy, you know, share the hammock with me. We were co-hammocking.
And we've split a hammock many a time before this.
Which was, you know, it was fine up until this one time.
Well, we also set up the hammock in the worst way possible. We set up our hammock at night. So we were just sort of like, we'll find the first tree that we can. And then, you know, just grabbed one that was not the right tree to use.
Yeah. And we did mention the granite in Tahoe. There's granite everywhere, just lying around, just giant big old hunks of granite. We happened to set up our hammock on top of a big pile of granite without noticing.
Had no idea.
So middle of the night, we're sleeping like two, you know, honeymoon babies that are about to take off on a disastrous year-long trip. And we awaken with a giant crash because our hammock straps had broken and we fell onto the ground onto a pile of rocks.
Yeah, we were sort of like spooned together in a way that like Leah's hip hit first.
It took the entire like 400-pound hit. Yeah. It was the largest bruise I have ever had on my body in my life.
It looked like the Eye of Sauron for
a
while.
It did. It really did. Like, I went into our honeymoon with this bruise that took over my entire leg, and I don't think it went away until, like, Peru.
My first thought, as soon as, like, because we woke up with, like, the snap of the strap, and then, like, a second later fell, and my first thought was, we have to get up. There are bears.
Yeah, which is not how you want to, neither of those things are how you want to wake up. And then we had to put the fucking other hammock back up. Also in the dark.
And then we were like,
climb back into it.
Yeah, like, well, one didn't work with all this weight. Hopefully the second one holds.
Yeah. When we woke up, we realized like we had just basically we'd been using the same hammock straps for a couple of years and it just had given up under our weight. We were definitely over the weight limit. There are weight limits for things like this and we were over it. And if there was a bear, we scared the shit out of that bear.
That bear was like, whatever animal is in there, I don't want to take it.
That was probably an omen because that was like the last place that we went before we left for our honeymoon. And we were like, man, what a weird travel disaster. I'm sure that will end as soon as we go on our honeymoon.
It was legitimately like 2 days before we left.
Yeah, that was an omen. What other fun Tahoe stories do we have?
So I have two that come to mind. The first one was before I was born.
Were you there? How do you know about it?
I was there in spirit. My mom tells me the story all the time. My Tahoe adventures have started before I was even a thought. My parents got married in Tahoe.
No kidding. Aw.
Yeah, they got married at this little tiny chapel, as you do. It's probably on the Nevada side because of that. And
makes sense.
It had this like corrugated metal roof. And my mom always tells me the story of there was a hailstorm. And so they go to that chapel and they're getting married. And my dad is rocking his best Don Johnson Miami Vice, like white suit, rolled sleeves, pastel shirt. He had wicker dress shoes.
How do you even wear wicker? It's like furniture.
Look, my dad looked really good in the 80s. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, he did. I have seen pictures. He was a very attractive man. You get a lot from him.
Yep. So this hailstorm started while they were in the ceremony and it was a corrugated metal roof. And so you can just imagine like hail just dropping on and everybody's like, do you take this man to be? And then nobody can hear shit. And meanwhile, my grandma Linda, who's one of the funniest people on earth.
Oh my God, I love grandma Linda.
Was just like, I swear that's an omen.
Oh my God.
That's an omen.
She's from Tennessee, right?
No.
Oh, I thought she was.
My grandpa's from Tennessee. She's from Arkansas.
Why does she have a southern accent then?
She's from Arkansas.
Oh, Arkansas. You got a little south in you. She knew.
This is the same woman who got a lap dance from my friend at our wedding.
Have we told that story yet?
We will later.
We'll find that. We'll find a way to work that in. That was definitely an omen. Because, your parents are no longer together. So speaking of omens, Lake Tahoe is a lot of omens for us.
Yeah, there's some spooky shit in Tahoe. My second favorite story, you weren't there for, but I was. I went snowboarding in Squaw Valley, and there's a run there called Siberia.
Sounds fun.
Speaking of omens, yeah. And so it was the last lift of the day. because a storm was rolling in.
Oh my God. I already hate where this is going.
And I go up to Siberia and it literally looks like Siberia. There's just white everywhere. No trees, just white.
Like it was like a blizzard?
Well, the hill was really high up, so there weren't a lot of, it was above the tree line. Hmm. So it's nothing but snow and this blizzard's coming in. I think I saw that it was like 25 mile an hour winds.
What the hell?
And I get off the lift, and at this point in my life, I am not good at snowboarding. And
because you're so good now. I'm just kidding. You actually are. I saw you last week. You were really good.
And so I get started and I'm like trying to scoot to start the run. And in the time of me scooting, my board got buried in snow.
What?
And the medic comes up and tries to help me. He's like, dude, you got to go. And he like, so I'm stuck up there. My friend's gone.
Did
I don't have any
leave?
Service.
Why did he leave?
He was like, I got to find other people. Are you good? And I was like, I think I'm good. I'm just going to get to this lift and take the last one. He's like, whatever, brother.
Oh my God.
And I eventually just take off my boots and I'm just trudging through Siberia. And I
trudging through Siberia.
And I get on the gondola, which is supposed to take you to Squaw Village. Mm-hmm. And I'm on the gondola and it just stops.
No, like that one movie where everybody got eaten by wolves, right?
Frozen, yeah. But not not that Frozen.
I was going to say, Frozen is a really great movie.
Will you just let that go?
Oh my God. I'm taking some jokes into the unknown right now.
Nice. So I'm on this gondola. It's like 5 p.m. because I was up on that hill for an hour and everyone's just gone. And I have to call the front desk and be like, oh shit, there's like a guy on the gondola right now. I got to help him off.
Wait, so you just like had self-service? I feel like I remember you sending me panicked Facebook messages.
So I sent you panicked Facebook messages while I was on the mountain, but then I finally got service in the gondola and I had like one bar.
Oh my God.
So that was the time I almost died in Siberia.
Yeah. Love that you are so into snowboarding. Stories like this really make me excited about how adventurous you are and not at all anxious for your safety.
So besides omens, what is there to do in Tahoe?
Nothing. Podcast over. That was it. We just wanted to tell some stories about ourselves.
On the next episode, we're going to be talking.
Well, let's talk about summer first.
Okay.
So my favorite thing to do in Tahoe in the summer is go camping. We did mention DL Bliss. It's like one of the best campsites in, I think, ever in the whole world. It's awesome.
We might have an unfair opinion here because one time we rolled into DL Bliss, like just trying to find a spot, and we actually got the nicest campsite there and probably ever.
You can't just like show up and get a spot. You do. It's very competitive to get a spot in DL Bliss. What we usually do, there's something you can do on reservation.gov where you reserve federal like campsites. You can basically choose your weekend and set up an alert, and if somebody else cancels their spot, you get their spot. So that's how we rolled up with the best campsite, because we had gotten somebody else's spot that did actually book 6 months in advance like you have to do to get a good spot.
Well, thanks, guys.
But that was a really nice. There was like a bridge in the campsite, which was awesome. Yeah. And they're all right next to the lake. There is a beautiful private beach in that campsite. It's awesome. It's really, really nice. There's also Meeks Bay. So Meeks Bay is down on the shore of Lake Tahoe. And there's Meeks Bay Resort. You can camp there as well. And that's kind of like right across the street from the start of one of our favorite hikes, which I'll talk about in a minute.
So you get the campsite on the beach. And then what are some things that you like to do over there?
Well, obviously there is the beach. Like Tahoe has awesome beaches. I mean, and this, like, we say that coming from California. Like, we just got beaches on beaches all over the place, both sides. It's awesome. And you can swim. Swimming is nice. There's like a swimming area out like right off the shore, basically. It is a little cold, but compared to the Pacific Ocean, it's actually not that bad.
And some people actually rent boats and you can go boating.
Yeah. We haven't been fancy enough to get like a big, you know, schooner or yacht. Are those what those things are called? We've never had
a yacht.
We have gotten kayaks, though, which is great. Kayaking is one of my favorite things to do in Lake Tahoe. And supping.
Yeah, you can do stand-up paddleboarding.
Yeah, we did that once. Do you remember what happened? What happened? Tell me about what happened. What happened?
Leah was better
at it. I was better at it than you.
The person who can't even stand up straight because her balance is so bad was better at stand-up paddleboarding.
Yes.
The world
only
is not
in Lake
fair.
Tahoe, because then I tried it again in Panama and I was really bad at it and you were way better at it. But I was better at it in Tahoe and that's what matters.
You got
and
real cocky about it in Panama.
That's
you were like, oh,
going
this?
On the record. Yeah. Well, okay. It only happened once. But that's why I think stand-up paddleboarding in Lake Tahoe is the best in the world, because I've only done it twice and I was better at it in Lake Tahoe.
You can also go waterfall hopping. There's like waterfalls all over the place. I was going to make a TLC joke, but then I realized that we did that in the episode description.
It's literally the title of the episode last time.
I know.
As long as you don't make me waterfall rappel, I'm good. Tell me about these waterfalls.
Well, luckily they're smaller than you're used to. Eagle Falls is in Emerald Bay. It's there's like a little alcove in the lake on the southwest side. And so,
oh, an alcove.
An alcove. It's a short hike up a hill and you'll just follow the crowds from the Emerald Bay parking lot. It's really pretty. And it's really like a very quick hike. We say very quick and we're the ones saying quick.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So, you know, it's actually probably like a 1 minute walk.
If you're in the south, there's also Horsetail Waterfall. So it's on your way into South Lake Tahoe, the actual town. It's 800 feet tall. And so it's the largest
one.
Yeah. Try rappelling it on that one.
No, thank you.
It's the largest one in the Tahoe area.
And then there's Glen Alpine Falls, which is right above Fallen Leaf Lake, where I've gone hiking a few times around Fallen Leaf Lake. And it's a cute little lake, much smaller than Lake Tahoe, but absolutely beautiful. But that one is cool because the water kind of like cascades down these little cliffs. So it has like that waterfall staircase look, which I really like.
Yeah, it looks like a damn screensaver.
And if you are a really serious hiker, you can attempt the Tahoe Rim Trail. So let me just give you the backpacker spiel about Tahoe Rim. So Backpacker describes it as a great long trail for beginners or a laid back walk in the woods for seasoned through hikers.
That sounds perfect for us, actually.
Yeah, it's 165 miles long.
Never mind.
It goes all the way around the lake. But the good news is there are a lot of places where you can start and stop and like hop off your hike. Lots of towns to stop and get refuels. So it actually does sound like a, you know, fairly beginner entry level through hike. And it takes about 10 to 15 days. So honestly, like if we can get back in our hiking game, I would really not mind doing it. It sounds pretty awesome, actually.
Uh-huh. I really like Desolation Wilderness.
What's it called?
Desolation Wilderness.
Oh my God, that sounds so scary.
It sounds scary. So I was imagining like fog everywhere and being lost in like a murky, haunted forest filled with like rabid bears and fresh carcasses.
I like where this is going, weirdly. Is this a Donner Party thing?
Just let it go, all right? Just hold on a few minutes. I was expecting Slender Man to like give me directions, right? But actually it's gorgeous and really stunning scenery. Probably the most stunning scenery in Lake Tahoe.
Yeah, there are like a bunch of charred trees, which does give it like that creepy feel that I was really wanting. Because there was a wildfire that went through a while ago. Please be safe about your fires, y'all. Leave no trace. But actually, no, it's stunning. It's gorgeous. And we did that hike, do you remember, Meeks Bay to Craig Lake, which is like 9 miles round trip.
Desolation Wilderness is actually a really big stretch of land. So the great thing about it is that you can kind of do an out and back however you want. So we chose Craig Lake.
Yeah, so you start like across the street from the campsite at Meeks Bay. And when we started, actually, it was foggy. Like we had a little bit of that ambient scary fog, which was fantastic. Everything was a little bit eerie. So we just kind of hiked into Desolation Wilderness, 9 miles in, and we climbed all the way up. We went up some rocky granite cliffs, which is a tongue twister, saw these just gorgeous views. And then we started hitting these lakes, like one right after another. There was all these alpine lakes.
Yeah, about 5 miles in, you start hitting them.
And we wanted to stop at every single one of them. They were all gorgeous.
I know. We didn't think that it could possibly get more gorgeous.
But Craig Lake is the best one. Yeah. Every other alpine lake is inferior to Craig Lake. It's worth continuing.
It's in this valley created by mountain peaks, and the lake is just a perfect mirror.
It's so Instagrammable, y'all.
I know. We had a lunch there, and then we head back.
It was perfect. My other favorite hike in Lake Tahoe, I think this one is actually like the one to rule them all, is Rubicon Trail.
Ooh.
So Rubicon Trail starts at DL Bliss. It's about another like 9 mile round trip, very similar. So you basically start at DL Bliss. You're going to hike all the way down because DL Bliss is far kind of above up in the cliffs above Lake Tahoe. You're going to hike down till you get to the shore through all these like pine trees and granite with just stunning views because you're right along the Tahoe shoreline, but above it. So you're going to have all these beautiful views of Lake Tahoe the whole time. Then you're going to get all the way down there. There's going to be like these meadows that you go through. And then you're just going to hit a random Norwegian castle and you can get some ice cream there, which is a wonderful midway point to a hike.
Wait. Before the ice cream, go back. There's a Norwegian castle in the middle of the hike?
Yeah. So it's called Vikingsholm Castle, which I feel like if you're going to make a Norwegian castle and stick it in the middle of Lake Tahoe, that's exactly what you should call it. And it's located right along the shores of Emerald Bay.
What? Like, Why?
Okay, so long story short, rich people.
That tracks.
So there was this guy named Ben Holiday, and that is his actual name. And he decided to build the first summer home in Lake Tahoe way back in the 1860s.
Oh, this site would be perfect. Boy, boy over there, grab my bags. Kick out these indigenous peoples.
Yes.
Hurrumph.
R.I.P. Washoe Indians. We're very sorry.
In 1928, Mrs. Laura Josephine Knight purchased the land and dreamt up the most fabulous holiday home that she could possibly imagine. Emerald Bay reminded her of the fjords that she had seen on her numerous travels to Scandinavia.
Ah, yes, Scandinavia. I just love fjords. Don't you know, they're very European.
You know it's pronounced fjords, right?
Scandinavia, darling. I've been loads of time to the fjords. Do you know they have trolls in Scandinavia?
This all seems really problematic. So she used this ridiculous castle for like 15 years and had all these fabulous guests over for these parties. And when they came over, they would take this little rowboat over to an island in the middle of the bay, which she also owned, called Finette Island.
Ah, yes. Hop in my rowboat and we shall sail to my private island.
She even built a tea house on it.
I love tea, and I love fjords, and I love trolls and being rich and fabulous. Okay, no, but like, no lie, I want to be best friends with her. She sounds absolutely amazing, and we would really get along.
I want to focus on Finette Island, though. There's so much more to this story than we've talked about.
What, like a cute little island with a fancy tea house on it? That sounds adorable. What more could there possibly be? Like scones? Because I love scones.
No, it gets weird.
Ooh.
So it was vandalized so much that now the tea house is just an empty outdoor shell. It's like just the outside of it.
But you can still have tea there.
No.
Oh. Oh. That's sad.
There's more.
Okay.
Before Knight built the tea house, the island was home to someone with my new favorite name ever, Captain Dick Them's My Toes Barter.
What the fuck?
They call me Captain Dick, but I say them's my toes.
Why do you say that, Captain Dick?
So he earned that nickname because he got frostbite in two of his toes and he self-amputated them and he kept them and he would show them to guests of the island.
You think the dinner was good? Wait till dessert. Them's my toes.
I'm taking notes for our future dinner parties because this is some of the best shit that I've ever heard in my life.
So Barter also built his own tomb.
Oh my God.
And chapel on the island for like when he eventually died.
Oh, so he's still there.
Nope.
What?
He died in the lake when he crashed at Rubicon Point in a storm in 1873. His body was never found.
But what about his toes? Where are his toes?
I can't be found, but make sure you find my toes.
Okay, the ghost of Captain Dick. We'll try to find your toes. I wonder how many dead bodies there actually are in Lake Tahoe.
I actually looked this up, and there are rumors that mobsters used to dispose of bodies in Lake Tahoe. And because the lake is so deep and so cold, those bodies are still in perfect condition, just like at the bottom of the lake.
That is creepy as fuck.
Luckily, it's not actually true. A few years ago, a team of divers spent a month exploring the lake and didn't find any bodies.
Supposedly.
There was an article in the Orange County Register with the very disappointing headline, Lake Tahoe underwater explorers find old boats and ancient trees, but no mobster bodies.
Damn, no mobster bodies. What a bummer.
They also didn't find any sign of Tahoe Tessie.
I'm sorry, who?
Tahoe Tessie. It's like Tahoe's version of Nessie, Loch Ness Monster.
Why is it so adorable? That's so cute.
Everything in Tahoe is cute.
Or haunted and frozen. So maybe there aren't frozen and preserved bodies floating around in the lake, but you gotta wonder, like, how haunted is Tahoe?
Oh, it's hella haunted.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, so there's a hotel in North Lake called the Tahoe Biltmore and has a resident ghost, Mary, who like roams the halls. And it was the site of the para retreat in 2018.
What is the para retreat?
It's the paranormal retreat. It's like paranormal Comic-Con.
I was thinking it was like parachuting in. Do people parachute in to Paracon? Paratreat?
I mean, I would assume so, but they'd be wearing like a ghost costume.
Oh my God, that's so cute. We should go.
So there's also the Hellman Ehrman Mansion on the West Shore. They said that there's like a presence and everyone who works there just feels energy.
Oh my God, we have to go.
And Viking's home is haunted too. And the rumor is that it's haunted by Mrs. Knight's husband.
Well, Harry never much cared for my tea parties in Scandinavia. So I bludgeoned him to death with a tea kettle. Joke's on him, now he haunts every tea party I have.
Okay, hold on. We got to stop because this is worrying me because you literally make me throw you a tea party for your birthday every year.
Yeah, and no pressure, but in 2 weeks, I'm turning 30 and it has to be the best tea party ever.
Well, I am not building you a tea house on an island.
Wow. Guess we're getting a divorce and you'll be haunting the house, the lake of our house, with my tears. Because I'll have killed you and then I'll be sad about it.
We haven't even mentioned just the thousands of people who have died in the Tahoe area. Like all of the Washoe Native people who were just murdered by white people.
Yikes.
Or the Frontiers people who came in and died.
Are we finally talking about the best story of all of Lake Tahoe? Is it finally time to talk about the Donner Party? Because I have been waiting patiently for so long to talk about the Donner Party.
Here we go.
'Twas the eve of winter, 1846.
Okay, you can't tell the whole thing.
No, come on.
We're just going to do Cliff Notes.
Fine. You can tell the Cliff Notes version, I guess.
So the Donner Party is this notorious California story of a group of people that went out west. Now, we're talking like Oregon Trail here. And if you know Oregon Trail, then you know that it starts in Independence, Missouri, and you basically just have to survive the elements as you make it to Oregon or California.
And nobody ever does. That's why nobody lives in California.
Yeah, there's nobody here. Stop coming. So the Donner Party was actually a collection of three different families. And when you think of Frontiers people, you often think about like
rugged men of the house.
Yeah, like rugged mountain men who can just like tromp across the country. But in reality, there were mostly kids and women on this, and it was like a full family. They just like packed up all their shit and left.
Yeah, they were looking for a better life and the frontier, and they were willing to risk everything for it.
So the Donner Party, what it would later be called, there was actually three groups that kind of merged together in the Midwest because they were like, we're going to do this easier if there's more of us because there's more survival that way.
More people to eat, don't you think?
Spoilers. The thing about crossing the frontier is that you have to start in spring because if you start any later, by the time you get to the Sierra Nevadas in the mountains, then winter's going to come and you're going to get snowed in and it's going to be hard to cross.
Oh, that sounds very difficult.
So if you
Wouldn't it be a shame if that were to happen? I'm sorry, I'm enjoying this.
So if you start in spring, then you'll make it over the mountains in time and you'll be in California. The Donner Party started a month late. That was
a terrible mistake.
Can you stop?
What do you mean?
Every line you do that.
It's
getting old.
Okay.
The Donner Party started a month late.
Oh, no. What do you want from me? You told me I couldn't react. Can I react or can I not react?
Okay, whatever.
Oh, no.
These also weren't seasoned pioneers.
No, they were just like families.
They were just like regular people who were like, well, we got nothing else. And then there was one guy, James Reed, who was the original leader of the group, who was just a rich dude who wanted to get richer.
He brought like a whole bunch of furniture in his wagon, right? Like he had like a couch in there and like a queen size mattress.
He had like the whole inside of his house. It was ridiculous.
It was a mansion like wagon.
They also had like dozens and dozens of pounds of just money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like gold, just lugging around at the bottom of their wagons. So what did he do?
So they got started late, like I said, and before they had left, they had read this book, The Immigrant's Guide to California, which is actually how they got the idea to go there. And it was written by this guy named Lansford Hastings.
He sounds like an intelligent and well-informed member of society.
Nope. He was a flim-flam man.
Oh.
So he was already in California, and he looked at a map, and he was like, why do they take the trail up north to Oregon? We need them in California. You can just go this way. And he just pointed at a map.
Because he was trying to start a war with Mexico, right?
Yeah.
He wanted to become the Emperor of California.
Little did he know that Andrew McMahon is that person.
No, Emperor, what's his face, of San Francisco? Don't we have an emperor?
Probably.
Okay, anyway.
So he just pointed at a map, and he was like, that'll work. And he never took the trail himself, and he published this book.
As a travel writer, this sounds irresponsible.
He later took the trail and he was like, oh no, I've made a huge mistake.
Well, at least he fact checked after the fact.
But it was too late because Reed and the rest of the Donner Party took the Hastings cutoff because they were behind on time. They started late and they were like, this shortcut is going to take us there quicker. The really darkly ironic part is the Hastings cutoff was like 20 miles longer than the original route. It was not a shortcut.
Oh, it just looked shorter on the map. I've made that mistake. We did that in Europe.
We did do that in Europe.
It wasn't as disastrous as this, though.
No, it was not.
So where did they have to go through if they didn't go up north into Oregon?
So typically what people did was they went north to avoid the Great Salt Lake Desert. The cutoff went directly across the Great Salt Lake Desert.
It sounds a little thirsty.
Yeah, it was days and days of being hunted, All of their
hunted
animals.
By who?
By the indigenous peoples.
Mm.
All of their, like, most of their oxen were dying.
Of thirst.
Of thirst. Mm. Their people were dying. There was just, it was like, imagine you're speeding across a desert and slowly but surely your whole family is just dropping like flies.
And you have like so much salt in your face and stinging your eyes. Do you remember we were in Salt Lake City and we saw like a salt mask that they had to use to cross the desert? And this was after the fact. Like they knew what they were getting into. But when the Donner Party was doing it, they had no idea. They had nothing to protect themselves from just like salt blasts in their face. And there was absolutely no fresh water. So they actually like hoofed it day and night. They didn't take a break at all. They walked for I think like 3 or 4 days straight through the Salt Lake Desert, and their oxen kept dying of thirst. It was rough.
There was even a mutiny. So James Reed was like sent out because he was like killing everybody, and then George Donner became the new like de facto leader of the group, which is why they're now called the Donner Party.
Oh, well, that sounds like it's going to work out better for them.
So eventually, and we are skipping a lot of disaster, eventually they get to the Sierra Nevadas. And I want you to imagine the speed that they took. They got about half a mile a day. It was...
That sounds real slow.
It was insanely slow. They were just pushing these carts inch by inch.
Up mountains.
There weren't switchbacks. They were just going up and over mountains at this point.
And there weren't like... This wasn't a well-trod route. Like the Oregon Trail, enough wagons had been on it that you could kind of just follow the path that had been carved out. And this was like brand new mountain. Let's push this giant wagon up it.
Yeah, maybe like 20 people had been through at this point. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to Truckee Lake, which is now called Donner Lake. And they decided to stop for the night. And that night, California's biggest storm came in and they were buried in snow.
Oh no.
So they were really resourceful, and the people who were experienced mountain men quickly built these cabins there. And they
sounds
were like,
nice. I love a cabin in Lake Tahoe.
Yeah, it was nice. And they were like, we'll just wait out the storm. It'll be fine. Was it fine?
I think it was not fine.
It was not fine. They got there in November. The rescue parties didn't arrive till April. They were in the snow in Tahoe for that long. And so that's... So they would cook up the last of their oxen. They were cooking. They were like boiling down their shoes and their clothing just to eat it for sustenance. And then eventually had to eat each other.
And that's when the cannibalism started. We did the thing.
We did the thing.
It's not this podcast. It's a different podcast. But we did the thing. So the saddest part about this to me, it's not like something happened that drove them insane and they started killing and eating each other. Right? Like we can't like villainize these people. They were sad, desperate families. And the grown-ups in the groups were willing to do whatever it took to save their children. Most of the survivors of this tragedy were children. So basically, the adults started dying, and in order to save the lives of their children, they like their last dying wish was like, "You need to serve me to my child. Please don't tell him what he's eating, but like, make sure he eats me."
Actually, no, I don't think anybody recordedly ate their family.
Yes, the Sarah Graves' father died, and his last dying wish to his two daughters was to eat him in order to survive. That was like the first one. It was on The Forlorn Hope. You need to read the book again. We're getting a lot of this information from a book called The Indifferent Stars Above, and it's very good and you should all read it. So let me talk about The Forlorn Hope.
Yeah.
So basically they were stuck at Truckee Lake, and they were right in front of a giant mountain. And they were like, okay, if we can just get up this mountain, we can see where we are. We can try to like figure out when the snow stops. But they couldn't make it up the mountain. They kept trying and trying and trying. They tried like 20 times. They made snowshoes. They were doing everything, and they could not get up this mountain. At this point, they're all kind of starving. They don't have very much strength, and the snow is just brutal. Like, keeps coming and keeps coming. So they sent out the Forlorn Hope, and essentially, the Forlorn Hope was a small group of the strongest members who were like, we're just going to get up there. We're going to bring nothing. We're going to leave as much as we can behind. We're going to book it to California. We're going to get help, and we're going to save everybody. And actually, they did. They did get help, and that help did come back and save the people who were left. But along the way, lots of people died and lots of people were eaten. And then it wasn't even any better once they actually... So the ironic part, and this is, again, like way more detail about this in The Indifferent Stars Above. But so they went to get help and they found James Reed, who they had cast out. This like douchebag rich guy from like 3 months earlier was there and thriving. And he was like, aha, you need my help again. Me, James Reed, hero. Wonderful, excellent. I should have sent my best men. And so he sent his best men, but it took them several months to get everybody back. And people just kept dying along the way. And it got to a point where they literally like left everybody in a hole in the snow. for like weeks. And they were like, let's just come back and get like their money because these people are going to be dead.
Yes. After the Forlorn Hope, and they were like, yo, shit's going down. There were four rescue parties. Three of them were like actual rescue, and four was like, okay, these people got money. Let's get what they got.
And the saddest part about it, like other than like children having to eat their own parents in order to survive, is they actually could have been okay if they were like less racist.
Yeah. The Washu tribe came up to them all the time and they were like, hey, saw you're hungry. Have you tried acorns instead of beef?
Like, did you know that all of the trees around here are actually edible? We've been living here for thousands of years. We can show you. Oh, no, you're just going to shoot at us and eat each other? Never mind.
So in that way, you can villainize them. But that was also, you know, that was status quo.
Yeah. Yeah. They were terrified, right? Like the entire time that they were hiking along for several months, indigenous peoples had basically been gently picking off their oxen one by one. And at this point, they were very scared of the indigenous peoples. But there are like archaeological records showing that the Washoe Indians had helped them. So and I find that fascinating.
And then in April, they made it out. There were 90 people in the Donner Party when they first started, about 90 that we know of, and 43 died.
Wow. That's brutal.
Yeah.
This was one of the worst pioneer disasters. One of the most brutal, but it's also been very well recorded. So we mentioned The Indifferent Stars Above. It's an excellent book. Also, the last podcast on the left, which we did a little shout out to, they have an excellent episode about this. We actually highly recommend listening to it while you're driving to or from Lake Tahoe. It really sets the mood.
We were driving back and it was like right after a storm. So there was a ton of snow and we're just like blank stare driving, just listening to. And then they'd cut out the liver of... That's not what they sound like, but
that's not at all what they sound like. But it's so good. It's really well done. I don't know why I have like such a weird fascination with the story. I'd never heard it before I moved to California. Like they don't teach this in the history books in Kentucky, you know, because why would they?
They should.
But I'm so weirdly obsessed with it. It's just like tugs at my heartstrings. I don't know why.
So speaking of Tahoe and winter.
That is the most awkward transition.
Okay, here's some upbeat music to help with the transition.
So speaking of Tahoe in winter,
it becomes this winter wonderland and it's just the most beautiful place imaginable.
It is. Like if you're not stuck there in a cabin eating everybody, it's great. No, okay. I'm sorry. We're done. So there are actually some things that like nobody told me about Tahoe before I went in winter for the very first time.
Like what?
So, okay. For starters, driving to Tahoe from the Bay Area on a Friday night is like this big communal road trip. Like, so everybody's paying attention to when Tahoe gets snow. And as soon as they get snow, everybody grabs their friends, grabs their boards, jumps in the car. And from like 3 p.m. to like 7 p.m., it doesn't matter when you leave because you're still going to arrive at 11 p.m. because of the traffic. It's like crazy.
Yeah, I always deny that that's actually going to happen. And I'm always like, we got to leave early. And then we arrive at our cabin and our friends are like, yeah, we left at like 7. We got here right before you.
Yeah. And it's like you're in this giant caravan of Bay Area cars pretty much the whole time. And everybody stops at the exact same place, which is the In-N-Out in Davis, and it's the best In-N-Out on the whole route. You can at me.
Okay, I agree that it's the best one, but I still maintain that you only think that's tradition because we do it. I don't
everybody
think
everybody does it. No, you walk into that In-N-Out, and like the entire In-N-Out, it's like three college students being like, "Oh God, it's Bay Area people again," and then like 55 like 80s montage ski bros from like Silicon Valley being like, "Chet, you gotta crush those mountains. We're gonna do some code later." This weird like Bay Area thing.
I thought you said we're gonna do some coke later, and then I realized you said code, and I was like, either one. Yeah.
Either one.
Oh, Bay Area.
So it's tradition to stop at an In-N-Out, and it should be the UC Davis one, my opinion.
If you see us there, say hi. It's also never as cold in the actual town. You'll go through this like snowstorm because there's always like 2 miles of chains and it's always like this really like billowy snow and you're like, oh my God, there's gonna be snow in town, and then you get there and it's like weather.
Well, but even when there's snow on the ground, you can still walk outside in like not very many layers, and it's the weirdest thing. It's like 50 degrees even when it's snowing in town.
And the thing about going, every single time you go with people, especially a big group, if there's somebody who's never been there, they always get scared because every time you go there, you get a warning that there's a snowstorm that's gonna come. And it's every single time somebody's like, there's a storm coming in. I don't think we should drive up there this weekend.
I mean, to be fair, the snow warnings are terrifying. It's like, there's going to be 26 feet of snow expected. You're going to have to turn back. Bring snacks.
Is Grandpa Bob doing the announcement?
I don't know. That's just my go-to accent. But it is. It's like really scary sounding. And I get why. But nowadays when we like read the winter snowstorm warning, we're like, ooh, it's going to be nice and snowy. So you did mention chains, and I think we need to talk about that. Chains are very, very important. You can't drive to Lake Tahoe on a good weekend and not either need to put chains on your car or have all-wheel drive. Very important.
Yeah, definitely recommend, especially if you're renting a car, just go for the four-wheel drive. It's worth it because chains, you can't rent them because you can't like reuse them.
You can buy them along the way.
You can buy them along the way. They're fairly expensive depending on where you go. You can get them cheaper if you get closer to chain control, but you're just kind of rolling the dice there.
But they suck to put on.
They suck so much to put on because you're just like in the snow putting on chains. It's the worst.
Freezing cold. It is almost as bad as getting stuck there for 4 months and having to eat your family member. I'm sorry, I couldn't.
Almost that bad.
I made it 4 minutes.
So these days we go at least once per year.
We definitely go at least. Sometimes more, honestly.
We usually bring a big group of friends and we get a cabin. And we got to make sure that there's like a hot tub. Everybody brings snacks. And
yeah, we like cook a big meal together. Yeah, half play of some us, games.
Half of us go to a ski resort.
It's really fun. And it's like one of our favorite things to do. We actually just got back this last weekend. We went to Tahoe with a group of friends.
Yeah, and you took a ski lesson.
I did. I took one ski lesson.
How did it go?
I cried, like a lot. But I finished it, which was my goal. My number one goal was like finish the ski lesson. My number two stretch goal was like don't cry. So I didn't hit that goal, but I did finish the ski lesson and I'm very proud of myself. You can see me being a majestic baby giraffe on skis on my Instagram stories under the Tahoe highlight.
We usually go to South Lake Tahoe, mainly because I really like Sierra. The thing about Tahoe in the winter, though, is that in the summer, you can drive from north to south, and that's totally fine.
And it's a beautiful drive, and you should do it.
It's a beautiful drive. It's also a beautiful hike. But in the winter, you have to commit to north or south because you can't usually take the highway route around because it's usually snowed in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we usually do South Lake Tahoe, but actually both of them are really nice. There's very similar things about both of them. Neither of them have like a very walkable downtown area. I've heard Truckee is really cute, but we haven't actually been. Neither of them have like amazing food. Like Tahoe is not a foodie destination.
Hold on. There's the German restaurant.
I do love the German restaurant.
Himmelhaus.
Himmelhaus? You can get really good spätzle there. It's like my favorite post-hike or post-skiing, now that I've done one ski lesson, food.
And there's also Bob Dog. It's like the best pizza.
Bob Dog.
Hey, Bob Dog.
Bob Dog. It is pretty good pizza. But it's not like a foodie place. You don't go there for the food. So honestly, picking north or south Lake Tahoe depends entirely on which ski resorts you prefer and which ones you're going to.
Now, you should know before you go there, if you're an East Coaster who moved to California and you're like, I have skied before, you've skied a hill. These are gigantic granite mountains.
And I say this as somebody who was born in Massachusetts and went to school in Massachusetts. And yeah, he's right. It's totally different.
So there are a ton of ski resorts in Lake Tahoe, and we can't cover them all here. But we can talk about some of our favorites.
What is your favorite?
Mine that I always go back to is Sierra at Tahoe. It has a special place in my heart because it's the first one I went to. It's the first major one you hit when you're heading into South Lake. And it's one of the cheaper options.
Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of really good like beginner and intermediate runs.
Yeah, their blues are a little bit easier than most places. So beginners have a lot there. It's also the least crowded. I don't think there's ever been a day where I've waited more than 2 minutes for a ski lift, which is crazy.
Yeah, it wasn't crowded at all this weekend. And it's one of the only remaining independently owned ski resorts in Tahoe, which is really nice. You can tell it's got that like family kind of vibe. It's not like one of the big crazy ones that has like the flashy village or whatever.
And it's also sponsored by Subaru, which has no bearing on your experience, but I just think it's kind of a fun fact.
Is that because we own a Subaru?
Yes.
The Subaru belonged to my late grandmother who was also a Subaru person. She was wonderful.
Yeah.
Subaru people. We love them.
There's Boreal Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Boreal's like probably the most budget friendly. But the thing about it is that they have a freestyle terrain park.
That does not sound like my cup of tea.
There's runs that aren't the terrain park, but that's like the main, that most of them are terrain. And you pass right by the Donner Party Memorial on your way there.
I take it back. We have to go there. That's my new favorite ski resort. I love freestyling. I love eating people.
I have to sleep next to you tonight. This is weird. There's Homewood, which is on the west shore. It's really small, inexpensive, and it's got the best view because it's right on the shore.
That sounds actually really nice.
Yeah. So if like your view is the priority, then that's the choice for you.
Yeah, actually, that sounds wonderful. And last time we were at Costco, because we always stop at Costco to see if they have discount lift tickets. Usually they have Sierra tickets, but this year they had Homewood.
I think they've stopped carrying Sierra. Sadly.
It's hard to know, but definitely stop by Costco to see if they have discount lift tickets because they usually got something.
Yeah. Homewood's mostly intermediate, but it's still a fantastic option.
What about the slightly higher priced options?
So there's two that immediately come to mind when you think of Tahoe, and that's Squaw Valley and Heavenly.
That sounds heavenly.
It is, actually. So Heavenly's a Vail resort, probably the most famous in the Tahoe. It's also the largest. It's got a couple of base lodges, and one of them is actually in the town of South Lake Tahoe.
Yeah, like if you like a walkable area with like shops and stuff, Heavenly Village is definitely what you're looking for.
They have a gondola from the actual town that's like on the main drag, and it takes you all the way up the mountain.
And it's right on the border with Nevada. So if you like casinos, they're right there for you. Listen, we're going to be honest. We are very biased towards the California side. Notice we have not talked about the Nevada side at all because casinos mostly. Sorry.
And then there's Squaw Alpine. So Squaw is like for serious people or people who want to get lost in Siberia. It hosted the Winter Olympics in 1960. So that's like, that gives you a gauge of how challenging the terrain can be. But it's, you know, it's like an all levels resort because it's a major resort.
I've actually heard that it's like a really like advanced resort for people that are like very serious about being 80s ski montage stars.
They do have beginner runs, but they're typically at the lower side of the mountain.
Mm-hmm. And then there's Sugar Bowl Resort. I like Sugar Bowl Resort because it is another independently owned resort, and their claim to fame is being one of the oldest ski resorts in the West and having the deepest and most ridiculous snow out of any of the Tahoe resorts. And also, and this is a fun little fact, which is semi-related, it's located on Donner Summit at Donner Pass. Where's Donner Pass, Jeremy? Does that have to do with what we were just talking about? Can you tell us?
Everything have to come back to the Donner Party?
Yes,
in this episode?
Everything has to come back to the Donner Party, but also Disney, which is my other obsession, because Walt Disney was one of the original founders of this resort.
That's going to be a future episode.
Actually, that's going to be the next episode. We're going to do it.
Nice.
Yay.
Doing a Disney one next.
Proud of us.
There are some luxury ski resorts, Kirkwood and North Star.
Oh, those sound lovely. How are they?
Couldn't tell you. Never been.
If you are the type of person who goes to luxury ski resorts, please let us know how that is, how that life is like. We are very curious.
Now, you might be asking, like, isn't Lake Tahoe always expensive? And the answer is that it doesn't have to be.
It really doesn't. Like, you'd think that, you know, everybody going to Tahoe every weekend is super rich. And yes, it's true. Skiing and snowboarding are not the cheapest sports, but it doesn't have to be. You don't have to go skiing and snowboarding while you're there. You can go to a budget place and get a cheaper lift ticket. There are so many ways to make your trip to Tahoe affordable.
And the first step to that is just Google anything about budget Tahoe winter and go to our website.
Ah, yes. That's so convenient that we have a giant practical guide to planning a Lake Tahoe winter trip on a budget.
Or you can just click the link in the show notes. That works too.
practicalwanderers.com.
So you might be asking, what else is there to do if you're not into skiing or snowboarding? Because, you know, Donner Party and breaking your legs.
I'm sorry. Have we not moved on from the Donner Party, Jeremy? It's just getting really annoying at this point, and I wish you would stop.
So there's sledding and tubing. You can tube at Sierra, and you can like rent the tube and go up this little moving sidewalk. Or
you can do it the hard way and buy a tube on Amazon. They have some really fun animals in silly shapes. There's like a fire dragon. He's kind of my favorite. And you can just like go to a good hill. So we went to Spooner Summit last year and just like walked up a little hill and then tubed down the little hill. And it was a very good workout and also a lot of fun.
There's also snowshoeing. Most of the major resorts will have snowshoe trails, but Kirkwood has like a whole snowshoeing center.
Yeah, which is basically just hiking, but like Legolasing on top of the snow, which is pretty awesome.
There's my favorite Tahoe and winter activity, which is just sitting in a hot tub.
If you're gonna rent a cabin in Lake Tahoe, which you should, there are some available on like VRBO or Airbnb. There are some pretty strict laws now surrounding that, but you can still find them. And do not rent one without a hot tub because they should have one. That is like that is a requirement.
I think that at some point it might have been state mandated that cabins have to have a hot tub.
Yeah, that's actually part of the like contentious new laws about Airbnb. Apparently, some douchey millennials from the Bay Area were like enjoying themselves too loudly in the hot tub, and that is why there are now stricter restrictions. So if you do go to the hot tub, you know, do so quietly. Also, try not to slip on the stairs, because I did that last week and my entire butt is black with bruises.
Yeah, it's rough. Speaking of falling on your butt, you can go ice skating at Heavenly Village.
That sounds athletic. So
hard pass on that. There's dog sledding at Squaw, which sounds adorable. There's huskies that you can dog sled with.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
I'm not sure the ethical side of it though, so you got to look into that.
I'd have to do some research. I have been dog sledding in Norway and it was ethical. You can definitely have some ethically responsibly treated dogs, but they are not, there's kind of no consensus on whether dog sledding is ethical. It depends on the place. So I can't tell you if they have been vetted or not. I have not done that research.
And if you want something that Leah will never do, or I will never do, you could go cross-country skiing at Royal Gorge, which is the largest cross-country ski area in North America.
I don't know why you would say that I would never do it, because you should know that I love Scandinavia.
Oh my God.
It's one of my favorites.
And we've come full circle.
I really do want to go back to Tahoe again. I know we were just there.
Like 2 days ago.
2 days ago. It's been a while. I would like to go back.
Really miss it, you know?
Yeah, and while we were there, I would like to go to the memorial, please. Please take me.
The memorial?
Yes.
You know that the memorial gets buried in snow, right?
That's part of the attraction.
Well, hopefully this has gotten you guys a little bit hungry to visit Tahoe.
Oh, I got it, because he's talking about cannibalism.
I brought the cannibalism thing back. It's so good. It's so good.
We should do like a count of how many times we talked about the Donner Party in this episode, because I feel like a lot.
Yeah. Can you guys let us know how many we did? And I think that it would be appropriate to end today with... some pretty radical 80s ski montage music.
Ah, chill chat. That's chill. That's so chill.